authors, writers, dreamers, all. Each day is an invitation to accept the call. I'm Brooke Warner from She Writes.
And I'm Grant Faulkner from NaNoWriMo. You're listening to Right Minded, weekly inspiration for writers. Hello, makers, do-it-yourselfers, craftspeople, artisans, and indie authors. Today we have a special show featuring Sarah Cannon, who is a NaNoWriMo writer who has become a successful indie author because she realized that self-publishing was the best way to realize her dreams of being a published author and making a living at it. I'm Grant Faulkner, Executive Director of NaNoWriMo, and I'm here with my indie-minded co-host, Brooke Warner of She Writes. Brooke knows way more about indie publishing than I do. So, Brooke, I'm curious to hear what guidance you give to authors to find the right place for their books, because in some ways we're at this interesting crossroads. On the good side, there are more ways than ever to publish your book. On the bad side, though, there are also more ways than ever to publish your book. So how does an author decide what the right approach is for his or her book, Brooke?
Yeah, so true. That's that double-edged sword. And each author has to take a look at the options available to them and then assess their particular path to publishing. It's not like you choose a path and then that's what happens either, right? Because of course, there are authors who want to pursue the traditional path and they're not going to land the publishing deal that they had hoped. Some authors decide to forego that path altogether because they want to retain creative control, or maybe they don't want to deal with the time that it takes to find a publisher, or they don't want to deal with the rejection. Some authors are so interested in the business of publishing that it's simply appealing to them to be an indie author, and they never even consider traditional publishing. And then there's the kind of author that I work at She Writes Press and Spark Press who choose a third way, which is the hybrid path, where you sign with a publisher who occupies a middle ground with some elements of self-publishing and some elements of traditional publishing. So at the end of the day, you know, it certainly comes down to author temperament and tolerance and timing and money, and also staying realistic, you know, so there's just so many factors to consider. I mean, Grant, you work with authors who end up doing indie publishing. I mean, lots of the people in the NaNoWriMo community do. So what do you notice about publishing preferences in terms of why they're choosing that route?
Yeah, you know, I think since we have such a huge number of writers, I think our writers are perhaps a representative of writers at large. You know, we're well represented by writers in nearly every space, whether it's a best-selling author like Marissa Meyer, who is traditionally published, or an author like Hugh Howey, who was one of the first groundbreaking indie authors. I do think, though, that NaNoWriMo writers tend to have a do-it-yourself mindset, though. And because NaNoWriMo is a do-it-yourself type of event, in the sense that the best way to learn to write a novel is to actually write the novel. So I think just that our community is very naturally disposed to self-publishing. So I talk to writers who self-publish just to give books to friends and family. I talk to many writers who self-publish because, you know, finding an agent or a publisher can take for years, and it literally can. It can be such a marathon. And so they're eager to get their book out there. And then sometimes people choose self-publishing just because they want to maintain that creative control, and they're naturally entrepreneurial, perhaps. I do think, though, that there's a huge, huge learning curve to publishing your own book, because you have to do it all. And each stage requires its own type of expertise and investment in many cases. So I'm curious, Brooke, how do you guide authors through this kind of nuts and bolts process? I mean, it's confusing to try to hire a designer. It's confusing to hire an editor. It's confusing to format your book, you know, and there are many other things. So this stuff is very important.
Right. Yeah, it is. And that's why I say, if you can, hire people, build a team. When I do the soup to nuts thing with self-published author, which I do offer in my coaching services, which is separate from my role at She Writes, I literally do offer everything. Like, I'll say, okay, well, my team can do your editing, your cover, your interior, your project management. And of course, there are countless other people like me who do those kinds of services. And most authors I find want that kind of one-stop shop. They want to work with a single person they trust. And then, of course, there are authors who want to build their team, you know, who want to find an editor over here, a designer over there, who want to try to maybe figure out formatting and design themselves, or who act as their own project manager. And that's why I said earlier that this is partly to do with temperament. And obviously, you have to have interest in doing these things in order for that to make sense for you to spend the time to learn it. Some authors would cringe at the idea of spending hours figuring out how to design a book, right? While others would take that as an artistic challenge. So I'd say, do whatever feels exciting to you, follow the thread of your curiosity. And if you're going to do some of this stuff really, truly DIY, make sure to have a trusted professional to bounce things off of, because I can't tell you how many self-published books I see literally on a weekly basis. Maybe that's exaggerating. Maybe I should say monthly basis, that I wish I could have saved in some way. You know, it's just a little bit of advice around what made it fall short of looking professional enough. And I want to recommend, as I think I have in a previous episode, the Independent Book Publishers Association's Book Publishing Standards Checklist. And I will put a little disclaimer here that I'm the chair of that organization, and they are still amazing. And you can download that publishing standards checklist on their website. And I recommend asking industry professionals about their take on your cover design and your interior design. Don't just ask your friends, because your friends might not know anything about book publishing. And they could be like, I love your cover. And a professional like a librarian or a bookstore buyer might be able to tell you, you know, it's not really up to snuff. So it is so important that you make sure that you're asking the right people to give you those evaluations. So, after detailing all of that, I actually feel tired, and I do see what a big deal it is. And Grant, I don't know, have you ever entertained self-publishing?
I have, and I do. And in fact, 5 years or so ago, I published one of my short stories as an ebook, just to learn a little bit about what was involved. So it was more of a learning project than anything else. I didn't expect to earn any money, and I wasn't trying to build an author platform around it or anything like that. And I was also very fortunate that I met you about that time, and you recommended some great designers and book formatters. And so now I'm thinking that maybe I should have done this from scratch to truly learn about the process through the eyes of one who's just beginning. But I feel very fortunate that I did know you, because you recommended, I loved one of the designers you recommended, and I've worked with her on other projects, in fact. So I guess that's part of your build the team approach. But, you know, I do think more and more about self-publishing now, even though I have an agent and I've published traditionally, but there are certain projects that I have that I just don't see them being commercially viable, or I just don't have the patience to wait the years that it will take to go from my laptop to the bookshelves. And so I'm toying around with re-entering self-publishing, I guess. My problem right now, though, is that I don't feel like I have the time to do it right, and I'm a stickler for these things. I want to produce a good book, and then I want to have the time to put the energy into selling it. So who knows? Maybe I need a hybrid publisher like She Writes Books. So I'm curious, could you define a little bit more about what a hybrid publisher is and how it works?
Yeah, I mean, I said it's a third way to publish, and that it has elements of self-publishing and elements of traditional publishing, and hybrid publishing is certainly being defined still. But the really easy definition is that the author does subsidize the work, meaning that they invest in themselves. And what hybrid authors get in exchange for that is higher royalties and hopefully some kind of distribution from the publisher and some support in marketing and selling their books. And so hybrid publishing looks very different depending on which hybrid publisher you land with. And again, the IBPA has some details about this, so I won't go too far into it, but it's solidly a third way of publishing that is not traditional and is also not self-publishing. So thanks for asking. I definitely appreciate it. And I hope that aspiring authors will leave today's episode feeling that despite the fact of there being almost too many options, this is so much better than how it used to be, which was that the gatekeepers said yes or no. And if they said no, then that was it. Your publishing dreams were killed. And we're not living in a space like that anymore. You know, it's much more exciting publishing climate, in my opinion, and so many ways to get your work out. And with that, you know, you can be a successful indie author. And I know we'll be talking a lot more about indie authorship on the podcast in weeks to come. So Grant, let's hear today's pep talk.
Yeah. You know, when I interviewed Hugh Howey years ago on a NaNoWriMo podcast, and for those of you who don't know Hugh, he was this huge sensational story of a breakthrough fiction author who sold millions of copies, I think, via self-publishing. But I noticed in each of his answers, he would weave in the phrase, you have to have the confidence. And whether he's talking about cover design or promotion, and it was almost like a verbal tick. And I was interested in it because the more I thought about it, the more I realized that there's not you know, when you self-publish, there's not an editor or agent who acts as a gatekeeper, decision maker for you. You have to have the confidence to make so many decisions and then execute them to put your book into the world. And so as I listened to Hugh, I kept wondering if I had the confidence for each step. And I think about that more and more as I've published. It'll be an ongoing conversation I have with myself. I think success is a decision of commitment and belief. It's just as important to cultivate the kind of confidence that Hugh talked about as it is to learn any other aspect of writing or publishing. And in some ways, I think we're all self-publishers these days because we write blog posts or post stories on social media or post on Wattpad or another reading app. There are just so many ways to publish your stories. And each time you publish anything, you have to have confidence. So my pep talk is really to encourage people to think of ways to build that confidence. I recently read this quote by Roxane Gay, who said, "If I was waiting for confidence to write, I'd still be waiting." So I took that to mean that she gained her confidence by writing and practicing, and that she's probably still gaining it, even though she's so big, you know, she's Roxane Gay. So I think the same thing goes for publishing. So writers should make it a practice to publish every chance they get, even if it's just a blog post, and you'll develop more confidence. What do you have for us for a green light moment today, Brooke?
Thanks for sharing those words by Roxane Gay. I love that. And I love her. And, you know, when we do an episode on indie publishing, it just makes my job so easy because I have 1,000 of these green light moments to share. So many stories of authors who have a dream to publish their work and who, in pursuing the indie route, are not only saying yes to themselves, but also fulfilling their dreams and checking off their bucket lists and claiming a piece of their creative selves that was maybe dormant or locked away or that they were embarrassed about in some way. There is so much to celebrate about becoming an indie author, and so I love to share these moments. And today I choose Phil Cousineau, who's a friend and local writer here in the Bay Area. He just cracks me up because he says about his books that he writes, one for me and one for the man. Those are Phil's words. And Phil is what the industry calls a hybrid author, which is different from an author who decides to publish on a hybrid press. A hybrid author is someone who publishes both traditionally and non-traditionally. So as Phil is saying, one for the man, so for that, for him, that's traditional publishers, and one for him, which is the indie route. And in Phil's case, he's a very prolific guy. And so he has a lot of books coming out, and some of them are passion projects, very niche. Like, to your point, Grant, he says that he knows they're not commercial particularly, and he still wants to publish them, and he knows they're not going to appeal to mainstream publishers. But he also knows that they have a readership, right? So he started his own imprint. He's a DIY self-publisher as well as a traditionally published author. And his attitude about the whole thing is so self-empowered, which is also what makes him a green lighter. He decides which ones are for the man and which ones are for himself. And this way of thinking about publishing is so refreshing to me. It's all out there ready for the taking, and maybe it ends up looking different than you originally imagined, but you walk the path and you see what happens and you take the opportunities where they come and you stay in control and you call the shots along the way. All of that is just the epitome of being a green lighter, cool and in charge, just like Phil and just like today's guest, Sarah Cannon.
Thanks so much, Brooke. And we are very coolly and in charge. In chargely, I don't know what, but we're going to take a break and we'll be back with Sarah in just a moment. Hey everyone, welcome back. I'm happy to introduce today's guest, Sarah Cannon, because she was one of the first NaNoWriMo authors who I met when I first started here years ago. And here are some things I love about her. After doing NaNoWriMo a couple times way back in 2008 and 2009, she had the moxie to dive in and self-publish a novel, Beautiful Demons. And she's now written and published 12 novels in the Shadow Demons saga, which I think would make a good Netflix series, by the way. And she's published 25 novels by my count, at least according to her website. And she says that no matter how normal any story she comes with is at the beginning, it's quickly invaded by ghosts, witches, demons, and zombies, which are perfectly normal, of course. And perhaps at the root of her creativity and her DIY spirit is that she helped her whole family to build a log cabin in the woods when she was a child. And that, of course, is the perfect setting for a horror novel. Thanks for joining us, Sarah.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for that introduction, too. That makes my childhood sound a lot more interesting than it was.
I think I saw a photo of that cabin on your website. And yeah, I want to live there. So I hope I can visit sometime.
Yeah, my parents are still there.
Oh, good. Well, I want to go back to that log cabin story, at least figuratively. because I'm curious about your decision to go indie in 2010. And I'm curious, did you start by, you know, trying to publish your novel traditionally and then decide to self-publish, or did you just always know that indie publishing was for you?
I honestly didn't know indie publishing was an option. I had heard, you know, everybody heard the stories back in the day of people that would just buy a garage full of printed books and try to sell them themselves. But I didn't really see that as, you know, an option to have the sales that I wanted someday. So when I first started writing, I was very much interested in learning how to publish traditionally. But the more people I met along the way that had been going down that path, the more I realized this is really tough. And not only is it tough that you have to learn to, you know, obviously write and craft a great novel, but you also have to write and craft a great novel that an agent believes is marketable or saleable in today's market. And that was kind of where I got hung up, is I started out writing something that was not at all what I wanted to be writing, because people told me, well, this is the way to make money fast if you write this particular genre. And so I got pulled into that with just this sort of desperation of, well, I want to make a career out of this. And I don't want to go back to, you know, working a 9-to-5 type of job. So I spent over a year working on that novel. And I wouldn't say I hated it. It was a great learning experience, but it wasn't what I was really passionate about. And so I submitted it to Harlequin and got a rejection. Actually, the day I was leaving to go get married, shouldn't have checked the mail that day if I could have a redo. But I got my first big rejection. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to write what I want to write. But I still was kind of going down that traditional path and spent, you know, that was one of my first nano books and was out there. It was a zombie novel, and submitted it to an agent once it was finished. And this was just the only agent I ever pitched to, my dream agent, and got another rejection. But the rejection was very similar. It was basically, I love your writing style. You have a, you know, great voice and everything else, but this particular story just isn't for me. And that was kind of a light bulb moment. In addition to hearing a lot of my friends say, oh, I've been trying to get published for 10 years and nobody, you know, everybody loves my voice. I'm a great writer, but I can't find the right story. And that was just the decision for me. I started to become aware of people like Amanda Hawking and, you know, Joe Conrath, and realizing, you know, I could put my books out there in ebook and let's see what happens. And then I don't have to worry about, is this a book that an agent wants to buy or sell for me? But is this something that readers want to read? And that really just appealed to me. I think I had an entrepreneurial spirit that I didn't even realize was kind of hiding in there.
Thanks for sharing that click moment, Sarah, because I think a lot of writers have that similar moment. And I read, or Grant told me, I guess, that you were overwhelmed by how much you didn't know when you decided to self-publish. And it is overwhelming because you have to learn everything from cover design to pricing to marketing. So how did you overcome being overwhelmed? And it's so impressive that you have 25 novels. So you've clearly learned the ropes. And I'd love to hear more about that.
Oh gosh. Well, you know, it is. It's overwhelming because you don't even realize just how much is involved with, you know, I became a writer because I wanted to write. I didn't think self-publishing meant I'm going to suddenly become a business owner and an entrepreneur. I didn't really put that together. But in some ways, in 2010, it was easier because everyone around you was just learning as well. And so there were a lot of people sharing knowledge and sharing what they knew more openly, where I feel like now there's just so many tactics. It's almost more overwhelming, I think, even though we have more resources available now. I almost think it's more overwhelming in 2019 to just be starting out. So, you know, that's one of the reasons that I started my YouTube channel, Heart Breathings, to kind of help people navigate this a little bit better. Because for me back in 2010, it was very much just baptism by fire, so to speak. You just put yourself out there and you're learning. I mean, my husband taught himself how to format ebooks, and we just sort of started this journey together and made a lot of mistakes, but also hit on a few things that worked really well. And just everything I found that worked well, I kept doing more of that. And if it didn't work, I just stopped doing it. And that was sort of how I ran my career the first couple of years.
Yeah, Sarah, I want to go back to 2010, essentially, a little bit after that, I guess, when we first met. And we met because we did a NaNoWriMo webcast together, and it was with Hugh Howey. And at that point, he was a groundbreaking success story, both as a NaNoWriMo writer, but also as a self-published author. And one thing I've always admired about the indie author community is how supportive everyone is to each other in a way that I think even it doesn't exist in the traditionally published community. So I'm curious, like, what were some specific things that you learned from people like Hugh Howey or others, and how did you learn them, and what were the most valuable things you learned from them?
Oh my gosh. I mean, there are so many people along the way that have, I agree, just really been willing to share. I think that for a long time, what you realize when you start getting into, you know, talking to people who are traditionally published is there's always been this veil of secrecy. People don't want you talking about your sales numbers or how much you made or, you know, what sort of marketing tactics you used. It was almost taboo to really share a lot of that information. But when it comes to indies, we all sort of felt like we're in this together. And the only way we learn is by, you know, telling each other what we tried. And so we had these communities like Kindle boards and, you know, NaNoWriMo and forums and stuff that we would share. So people like Hugh Howey and, you know, S.M. Rain and Robert Crane and some other really great indies out there, just sharing information about like, hey, you know, it's really working for me to try setting the first book in my series free, or you know, continuing to write in a single series over the course of, you know, a couple of years. So you can really start to build that up, and people telling you don't get discouraged if the first three books don't take off, and sharing their experience that like, oh, my series didn't take off till book five, and here's what I did to get there. And so just the sharing of that knowledge of the different strategies and tactics that you could use, and even people, you know, sharing things like, here's my sell through numbers. And if I can get this many downloads on book one, I know I can sell this many of book two. And just the openness of how much money people were making. Like Joe Conrath had a blog that he kept in the very beginning that he would share, you know, here's the list of indies that have sold 1,000 books. And he would, you know, list their names. And then you could reach out to them and say, hey, how did you do that? And people would share. And I think that is really a part of what made this community unique and what made it so powerful right from the beginning.
Thanks for sharing that. I love indie authors. and indie authors have to be active on the web and develop an author platform just like any other author in order to get the kind of visibility they need to sell books, really, and just to get their work out into the world. And so I think that's sometimes a misconception, right, that somehow you only need to do that if you're trying to get a traditional deal. And it's clearly not the case. So I wonder if you could say a word about what you think about author platform and how you developed your own and what advice you would give other people.
Well, I think that author platform in terms of, you know, your interaction with your fans is actually becoming more important now than it ever has been in indie. And one of the magical things about indie publishing is I think that even though we're, you know, whether you're traditionally published or you're indie, you're just a person and you're, you know, still just sitting in your house writing alone all the time. But there's just a feeling of accessibility. And I think that readers really appreciate that and have latched onto that with the indie community that, wow, I can send an email to this author or I can reach them on their Facebook page and they're going to respond to me. And, you know, part of it is that we want to build a community and part of it is that, you know, we're hustling for sales. So we want to make sure that we connect with our readers and that we understand what they want. And we make them feel important. But I think that over probably the last couple of years, there's been a real shift to more focus on advertising. How can I get Facebook ads running or, you know, spend money on Amazon services and different things like that? But I'm feeling and sensing a shift back to sort of, I guess you'd say, sort of like grassroots sort of movement of like people are really starting to shift back to paying attention to their fans, really listening to what their fans want, really building that sense of community up with your fans. And so I think that things like blogging again, being really active in Facebook groups, YouTube channels, and different social media is going to become an even more important part of the market. And I think a big part of that is because there is just so much available right now to read, you know, as more indies enter the market and you still got all the traditional published books, there's just so many choices. So one of the best ways to sort of differentiate yourself and really connect with fans is to start building that community. So I think it's going to become even more important to have that author platform where you're really connecting with your community.
So, you know, I've read or I've heard you say that self-publishing is a marathon, not a sprint. And now that you've been doing it for, gosh, about 9 years now, what do you mean by that?
Oh, Grant, I'm learning even more and more how true those words are. You know, I think that when you think of sprinting, and I really, if I could get a message out there, if there are people listening who are just getting started and feeling overwhelmed, this is really some of the best advice I have for you, is that it really is truly a long-term game. And every decision that you make now is going to affect you in the future. And I think that it can feel, you know, the sense of overwhelm, the sense of, you know, right now we have so much, like one of the things I was talking about earlier is we have access to seeing people's income levels and their sales numbers. And so something that gets triggered for a lot of people who are just starting out is, you know, does that mean I'm a failure if I've only sold 1,000 copies of my books? But selling 1,000 copies is no small feat. And it's something really to be proud of, but it can make you feel defeated when you see a bunch of people that are sharing like, oh, I made $30,000 this month. And so it's kind of hard to know where you stand. And so I think that when you focus on what's going on right now, how fast can I get there? How, you know, I've got to compete with these people and I've got to, you know, just make money as fast as possible. We start to make mistakes that we start to base our decisions of what we want to write and who we want to be and how we want to connect with our fans. And, you know, even some of the decisions that we make on the short term, how fast can I get there? You know, I want to make sure everybody knows that I'm being serious and that I'm a success. And what we really need to be doing is the opposite, really looking at the long-term vision for our lives, not looking at anybody else and, you know, comparing ourselves to them or feeling like it's taking us too long or whatever. Because the truth is, you don't see a lot of the behind the scenes of what's happening with people that have these $30,000 months. Most of the time, they're either spending a lot of money to get there, or they've been at this for years and years, and they're just having this great month. And they make $30,000 this month, but 6 months from now, they may have a $2,000 month. And you're not seeing the whole package. You're just seeing this like one moment in time and comparing yourself to that. So I think that it's so much healthier for you to really look at it as, this is a marathon. This is something that you're building. It's not a get rich quick scheme. It's not, you know, how fast can I just jump in and make a bunch of money? It's really about building a quality product, like really focusing in on craft, really writing the best stories that you can, and making decisions that align with your personal goals for the future. What are your real long-term goals for what you want to accomplish? And I think it can become difficult when we start comparing ourselves to others or seeing a lot of other success stories and feeling like we're in a race to get there somehow. Just kind of remembering that there's really no time limit on your success. And one of the best things that you can do for yourself is sort of slow down, really think about what it is you want, and make decisions that really align with those long-term goals.
That's sound advice, Sarah. Thank you. And in closing, we're going to wrap up and ask you a final question, which is to share the very best thing about self-publishing and the very worst thing about self-publishing.
Oh my gosh. Well, I guess I will start with the worst thing so I can end on a good note.
good strategy.
In some ways, they're very similar answers, but I think one of the worst things about self-publishing is the fact that everything changes so quickly that, you know, you feel like you're just starting to understand, okay, this is working. I can set this book free and use this as a loss leader. And I've got these strategies and things are working. And then something like Kindle Unlimited comes along and suddenly it blows everything, you know, your whole plans out of the water, and the entire industry changes in an instant. And you have no control over that. And I think a lot of us that indie publish are, you know, people who like control over our careers. And so it gets frustrating when, you know, vendors can make choices that affect us all. And it's hard to sort of, it's like having the rug pulled out from under you sometimes when unannounced, a change comes through one of the vendors, you know, like Kindle Unlimited is a good example, that you can't change and you have to kind of figure out a new way of doing things. And that can be one of the hardest parts of self-publishing. Now, in terms of the best parts of self-publishing, it goes back to actually having quite a bit of control over your career. You have that access to your fan base. You have access to your numbers. You can see exactly what's happening. There's, you know, if you're an impatient person, like I tend to be, it's just really made for you because, you know, I don't have to wait and see how this book is going to do at launch. I don't have to ask anyone's permission for how I want to write this character. I don't have to, you know, hold myself back if I want to switch genres or do something that's a little bit out there or seems like risk. If it's something that I want to do, I can just 100% follow my heart and trust that that's going to work out for me. And so far, you know, it really has. And I've made mistakes along the way, but I always know that they were my choices and my mistakes, and I can own that. And it's just one of the things I love the most about indie publishing.
Well, thanks so much, Sarah. You're inspiring as always.
Thank you, Sarah. It's been a real pleasure. So interesting to hear your insights on indie publishing. So thanks.
Thanks so much for having me, you guys.
We'll be right back after the break with today's writing action.
Well, today's writing action is actually more of a publishing action. I think it's really important to explore self-publishing, no matter who you are. And it's relatively easy to do. As I mentioned earlier, I published an ebook about 5 years ago, and I did that with the help of Brooke, who recommended a cover designer and a formatter. And it was just a fascinating experience, I guess, for me to work with a cover designer and put together this little ebook and upload it on different sales platforms and see how it all worked. So, Brooke, I'm curious. It's been 5 years since I've done this. What would you say are the basics that a person needs to know to put together an ebook and do this?
Yeah, you know, it's a low barrier to entry. I think that's the number one thing about an ebook. It can teach you a lot about the self-publishing marketplace. And what I like about ebooks is that they're like little thought bubbles or little experiments. You can put them out without having too much investment, you know, either emotionally or financially. You can see how they do. They can be loss leaders, and they can also help you build your author platform. So in reality, I mean, yes, you want to do it well, make sure that it is super well edited. You know, don't put stuff out there that looks schlocky or that hasn't been edited and proofread. So you do have to spend a little money in the sense that you have to get an editor and a proofreader, and you have to hire a cover designer, and you have to have someone format the book and convert it. So there are steps that need to be taken, but way fewer steps than print publishing. And the other thing that I love about ebooks is that they usually are very short. If you're just doing an ebook, you could do something that is like, you know, 30 or 40 pages, or, you know, if people are thinking about word count, maybe 10,000 words. And it is a great way to learn the industry. And I agree with you that everyone should do it. It's just a nice way to build your inventory of content. And for people who are like, you know, I haven't published anything and I'm working on a book and it's going to be 5 years before it comes out, get an ebook out in the meantime, you know, because you can, because as I said, it's a lower barrier to entry. So this is a publishing action. It's not a small one, but we encourage it.
Yeah. And I'll just close by saying the 10,000 words is a really interesting word count to shoot for. The story that I published was probably about 7,000 words. And you could do something like publish an excerpt from your novel. You could take blog posts that are related to a theme. Anyway, there's different ways to repurpose your writing just to experiment with this.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Right Minded is a weekly podcast. As you know, download it, recommend it. Please rate us, as we've been asking. It helps us to get more listeners, and we so appreciate that. And thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.